In solidarity with the Kazakhstan uprising, Reform and Revolution, a Marxist caucus in DSA, was one of the co-hosts of an international meeting on January 22, 2022. Ayanor Kerminov from the Socialist Movement Kazakhstan gave a report on the situation of Kazakhstan, on the uprising in early January, and the contribution of striking workers alongside the repression and role of the different imperialist powers. The meeting was organized by anti-capitalist resistance in England and Wales, Contracorrente in Italy, Ecosocialist.Scott in Scotland, International Socialistische Organization in Germany, Lernen und Kampf in Germany, Reform and Revolution in DSA, United States, Republican Socialist Platform in Scotland, Russia's Socialist Movement, RISE in Ireland, and SAP, Anticapitalisten, in Belgium. Here you can listen to the audio recording.
My name's Terry Conway, and I'm a member of the leadership of the ACR, Anti-Capitalist Resistance in England and Wales. I'm really pleased to be co-chairing this meeting tonight with Paul Murphy from RISE in Ireland. It's clear from the response to the petition that many of our organisations were involved in putting out on the 12th of January, which gathered lots of signatures from individuals and organisations around the world, that the excitement that we shared at the uprising of workers in Kazakhstan from the beginning of January was shared by many people. And it's obviously hugely important to be here tonight to hear from Ayanor from the Kazakhstan Socialist Movement about their analysis of the situation as it's developed, and to look at perhaps some of the tasks facing socialists internationally in solidarity with the protests in Kazakhstan, and also, I think, with the thousands of people that remain imprisoned as a result of the crackdown, not to mention the more than 200 people who died that we know of. International solidarity is absolutely key in this situation. We were all inspired. It was a great start to the new year. After, I think, for most of us, 221 had not been a brilliant year politically in any of our countries, to see the huge revolt of working class people in Kazakhstan against the massive attacks on their living standards. I think many of us have become aware, more aware perhaps than we were previously, of some of the previous history of revolts in Kazakhstan. In London, we organised at quite short notice, the ACR, together with a number of other left organisations, organised a picket of the Kazakhstan embassy to protest the repression that was going on, including the involvement of foreign troops in that offensive, despite the fact that the weather was awful and it was called at short notice. We had a very good picket of the embassy. A lot of common themes were raised by the speakers on that protest. And we then, and one of the great things about that was that we had a couple of messages of solidarity on the protest from socialists in Ukraine, from the Ukraine Social Movement, and from the Ukrainian Socialist League. So it was good to see that solidarity across other parts of Eastern Europe. We went from that protest to one called by Kazakhs in London who didn't come to the embassy but gathered in nearby Trafalgar Square. And one of the things that I was reminded by the signs that some of those protesters were carrying was the history of protest in Kazakhstan. So they had signs that related to the protests of the oil workers in Kazakhstan in 2013, where at least 25 oil workers were murdered at the time of the suppression of that strike, and also of the protests in 2016, which forced the government to back down. But of course, you didn't come to this meeting to listen to me or to other socialists from Western Europe. You came primarily to listen to Aina. So I'm going to hand over to him now to speak to you. And then there'll be plenty of time for comment and questions from the floor. So I'm very pleased to welcome Aina from the Kazakhstan Socialist Movement.
Спасибо, товарищи. Спасибо за ту кампанию солидарности, которую
вы организовали. For the solidarity campaign that you organized, for the petition that gathered so many signatures of members of different organizations and movements and different groups.
Важная солидарность, которая...
I think the solidarity is utterly important, especially amidst the state of dictatorship and repressions that've been launched against activists and different protest organizations, as well as workers activists. I myself would like to make this little intervention, tell you about our position and our take on the situation and the events that happened in Kazakhstan. We believe that it was a true social explosion. There was this massive protest, popular protest. The reasons for this social outburst lie with the capitalist model that was built after the restoration of capitalism in this former Soviet Republic. We believe that it happened to be a logical result of the policies that were carried out by Nursultan Nazarbayev and his team. They carried out really terrible neoliberal reforms as regards extracting industries. Those reforms also targeted social security programs. Margaret Thatcher called Nursultan Nazarbayev her best student among the presidents in the post-Soviet era. The policy of market reforms brought many people below the poverty line. People lost their jobs because of the deindustrialization in the country, and because of the agricultural reform that put an end to collective farming in the country. The Kazakh economy took a role of the raw material supply in the international division of labor. American and European companies took over two-thirds of all oil and gas production in Kazakhstan. So the place where all these protests began are the western regions of Kazakhstan, where all the gas and oil extraction and production is centered. So that's where the protests were sparked. Those are the regions where the Western capital dominates. So speaking about the reasons for the protests, they were all concentrated as well in the west of the country. The Mangistau region and the Jinalzin city, that's the place where 10 years ago a protest of oil workers was dispersed violently. A lot of workers were killed, as you said, correct? So these regions, including Jinalzin, are the places where so many people are unemployed. And the only place where people can actually work is oil and gas. There was also steel industry in the region, but it got completely lost. So now, for every worker, there are, let's say, seven or eight members of the family that they have to provide for, and they don't have work. So I think that's why protesters made demands for building new enterprises and new factories. The workers' movement history is quite rich. There were mass strikes beginning in the early 2000s. The local population and workers supported each other, and there is a long history of class struggle in the region. Another reason for strikes and protests was the spiking inflation in the country as regards food items that made it impossible for the workers to provide for themselves. It hit the region very strong because Mangistau is a region where there is where they have to bring all the food supplies from other regions. Therefore, prices there are quite high. They are higher than anywhere in Kazakhstan. So this spike in inflation, the inflation grew two or three times, and that created really strong discontent among the population. The third reason is that workers and worker collectives of oil workers who've been on strikes from early 2021 did not succeed throughout the year. There were many strikes in those enterprises where there is international capital. The workers demanded the freedom for trade unions activities, legalizing their trade union activities, as well as taking measures to create new jobs and tackling privatization in the area that led to hundreds of thousands of workers losing their salaries, losing their social benefits, losing their working rights.
Соответственно, эти требования удовлетворены не были.
These demands were not satisfied in 2021. In autumn of 2021, there were legal proceedings, and some dozens of workers were fired because they organized strikes. The workers realized that the usual means of struggling would not allow them to gain anything. Another reason that created some serious tensions among the oil workers was that at the Tengiz deposit in the neighboring region, Atarau region, that is neighboring with Mangistau region, at Tengiz Chevroil, 40,000 workers were fired. This dismissal of workers took place in October 2021, and it shocked all the oil workers across the country. So what Tengiz Chevroil is? 75% of its assets belongs to Chevron and ExxonMobil. The workers in the Mangostau region also expected that they could get fired, and they were ready to strike back. There is yet another reason. The Mangostau region and the deposits that are in that region have been already very strongly worked with, so they have been almost depleted. So all of these reasons have been accumulating, and they somehow had to produce mass movement. So what sparked the protest? It was the spike in fuel prices. The liquefied petroleum gas. The government price cap was lifted on the 1st of January. The LPG prices spiked from 60 tenge to 120 tenge. Let's say it is now about a quarter of an American dollar today. The local population and workers blocked the roads and organized for a spontaneous protest in Zhinaozen. The workers in other regions and in Aktau also took to streets. The police tried to disperse the protesters, but they didn't succeed. The local population, along with workers who were very active in the early days of the protest, called those strikes and protests to last for as long as it takes. So, since the workers were the core of the protests, besides the demands for bringing down the gas prices, they put forward another demand to raise their pay twice. there were more and more new social and political demands as the protest developed. On the 3rd of January, the workers were joined by workers from other industries. The protesters began to build tents in the streets. The local population also tried to bring food, clothes to protesters to support them. So that was a true popular protest, and its core was workers. So on the 4th of January, there was the all-out strike that reached out to other oil-extracting regions of the country. So the reason for this general strike was that to the center of the city of Aktau, military aircraft arrived, and the workers, since they did not want the Janaozen events to be repeated, they blocked all the roads that led to the airport of Aktau. They also blocked the railroads and other communications. In Atarau region, Tengiz Chevroil Royal workers began their strike. So on the 4th of January, protests sparked across the western Kazakhstan. On the 4th of January, the strike of ArcelorMittal company began. That's in the center of Kazakhstan, in Karaganda region. There was the strike by Kazakhmys. That is the company with the participation of the British capital. It's also the center of Kazakhstan. Other cities joined the strike. There were, for instance, there is the city of Krontau in the Aktubinsk region, where steel workers did not simply begin the strike, but they actually took over the control of the city. They built their own checkpoints there. Their main social demand was to bring down prices on some foodstuffs, to increase their pay, to improve the labor conditions, to establish freedom of trade unions activities and creation of new jobs. There were also other demands. On the 5th of January, in Janaozen, which became the true political headquarters of the political movement, political demands emerged. That was the dismissal of Nazarbayev, giving freedom to all political prisoners, going back to the constitution of 1993, the guarantees for the freedom of trade unions and parties. There was also the Council of Elders elected from the workers. It gave an example of creating similar committees and councils in other cities on strike. Therefore, we believe that the role of the workers' movement was decisive because it was the labor collectives that became the core of the protest, and they gave an impetus to the protest across the country. The protest took place in 75 cities in the country, but the strongest protests broke out in Almaty, the former capital of the Kazakh Republic. The core of the protest was formed by domestic migrants and unemployed youth. Those domestic migrants are people who live on the outskirts of the capital. And there is also the former agricultural and rural population that migrated there. The clashes in Almaty demonstrated the inability of the police and the army to do anything with the protesters, to take control. The protests on the 4th and the 5th of January spread across the whole country. President Tokayev made the government resign, and then he also dismissed the head of the National Security Committee, the one that was put there by Nazarbayev. The protests began politicizing. One of the main demands was that Nazarbayev and his officials and oligarchs had to go. We believe that what happened in Almaty later on the 5th of January, were the provocations organized by the National Security Committee, KNB. They trained provocateurs to create chaos in the big cities of Kazakhstan. So these special services were the instigators of the looting and violent clashes. And that was what provided the grounds for Tokayev to blame all the protesters and to claim that they were terrorists. And therefore, Tokayev imposed the emergency, the state of emergency in the country. And he even said that the police could shoot at the terrorists. So more than 10,000 people were arrested. And the number that you mentioned, 225 people who were killed, I think it's a lot higher, unfortunately. And there are still mass arrests, people are tortured. And I think the Nazarbayev regime is still with us. That's the methods that they use to silence the popular movement in the country. Unfortunately, I haven't finished my report, but I think I will take your questions and give more details that you're interested in. Thank you.
Спасибо, Айнур. Thank you very much, Айнур. And very good to hear from you. Okay, thanks a lot, comrades. So my name is Paul. I am a member of Parliament for People Before Profit and a member of the RISE network, and I'm co-chairing with Terry. Thanks a lot to everybody who's attending the meeting. And there was an idea in the chat, which I thought was a good idea. It's up to you whether you take it or not, but was to change your Zoom name to incorporate your, if you have an organization, no problem if you don't, but the country that you're in, and to give a sense of the international character of the meeting that we are having at the moment. And also just, I'm sure we will thank again, but very much to thank the interpreters, and there was comments in the chat, which I'm sure the interpreters didn't have time to look at, thanking them for their very excellent job of translating INR. For us to have simultaneous interpretation is a real treat. So I'm going to make a few short remarks and then open it up to questions, and we'll have a lot of time for INR to come back. I had the privilege to spend time in Kazakhstan with INR in 2011, in July of 2011, and to meet with the oil workers of Zhanaozen, the center of this uprising, and then involved in a massive struggle of a strike then. Really inspiring experience, getting to speak to an open-air meeting of thousands of workers. And I can speak just a little bit to what INR was speaking about, you know, the actual real tradition of militancy, of organization, and of class consciousness that exists amongst these workers in Kazakhstan, where it was striking to me in 2011. You know, sometimes the left can be guilty of, from the outside, talking things up a little bit. but when I went to Kazakhstan, it was real that in 2011, the oil workers themselves came up with the demand that we want nationalization of the oil wealth under workers' control. That was a real demand from below of the oil workers. And it came from their own experience of them doing the hard work, them living in conditions of abject poverty, while the elites within Kazakhstan around the clique of Nazarbayev lived in just extreme richness. I mean, if you visit Kazakhstan, it's like Las Vegas, the kind of gaudy opulence in the capital city. That's what it's like. That's how they live. But also the wealth for the likes of Chevron, the US multinationals, British multinationals, Gazprom, etc., all of them getting rich off of the nature and the labor of the people and the nature of Kazakhstan. I mean, I think today we would also add the question of expropriating completely the wealth of the likes of Chevron, the fossil fuel multinationals, and actually paying the people of Kazakhstan and the workers of Kazakhstan to leave all that oil wealth in the ground, and to mean that everybody can have a much higher standard of living without the need to take these fossil fuels out. Second point I wanted to make is just to thank all of the comrades, many of whom are here, for the very tremendous response to the declaration of solidarity with the uprising in Kazakhstan. I can't remember, I'm sure there are examples, but of such a statement from the, you know, radical revolutionary left, and getting support from such a broad range of organizations, both on an international scope. We got more than 40 countries, we got, I think, close to 300 signatures. And mostly that wasn't, you know, just individual members of parties. That was people with positions in the trade union movement, in parliament, in social movements, etc., in the women's movement, anti-war movement, anti-racist movement. It was, you know, people with profiles and so on. And also from like a very broad range of radical and left organizations in operating in a non-sectarian fashion. And I thought that was very, very important. And I think it was rooted in the crucial, you know, basic, simple idea that an injury to one is an injury to all, which is the basics of our, you know, basic workers' organizations, our trade union movements. But understanding that that doesn't just apply on a domestic, on a national level, but that also applies on an international level, that wherever workers are rising, are organizing against oppression, against exploitation, it is in our, it's our duty, it's also in our interests to express solidarity and seek to assist them. Related to that, I want to raise a question for Ayanor for when he comes back for answering his the first time or the second time, which is that I think one of the best things that the Communist Party in America in the early 1920s did was its kind of non-sectarian class struggle solidarity work it did. So those who were the victims of repression of the capitalist state, of whatever, you know, particular political tendency, if they were fighting for workers' rights and they were the victims of repression, they stood for them and they tried to organize defenses and assistance and solidarity for them. And so most famously was the International Labor Defense Campaign with others in defense of Sacco and Vanzetti, who weren't communists, they were anarchists, but they were framed by the US capitalist state and ultimately executed. And it was a huge international campaign, which included strikes in a whole number of different countries in opposition to what was happening to them. And you know, the US Trotskyist movement attempted to try and continue some of the best of that tradition. And so the question, and this came to me by a number of people who signed the kind of political solidarity statement to Ayanor, is are there particular cases that we should be raising of trade unionists, of socialists, of people who we should be highlighting that are being repressed right now, who are being held in prison or have cases pending, et cetera, that we should be raising in parliament, or we should be highlighting in ways in trade unions, et cetera, around the world that we should begin to develop, you know, broad solidarity campaigns with that could make a practical difference. And the final point I'll make is it's very striking how, you know, all over the world, you know, capitalist countries are different, I mean, quite different, but how strikingly similar some of their propaganda can be. And, you know, the idea of the outside agitator being responsible for the trouble, no matter where it happens, is a very, very common idea that they use everywhere. You know, I would presume that it is an idea that is kind of as old as class society, that as long as there's been oppression and people have been rising against oppression, that the elites have always said, oh, it's because someone from the outside has come in to try and put things up. And I mean, in Ireland, we had this massive movement against the water charges. So 73% of people refused to pay the water charges, mass civil disobedience, mass non-payment. And really the government tried to say, oh, it's outside agitators, it's the socialists, you know, we can't make people not pay their water charges. We can't make 100,000 people repeatedly protest. Clearly the people themselves want not to pay. But the same with the Kazakh government. They say, oh, it's, you know, outside color revolutions, the CIA, far-right Islamist elements, etc. It's the same kind of ideas that we also shouldn't fall for. And I finish on this. And of course, like, you know, we don't have to be naive. Of course, would the CIA, would Western capitalism like to use events that happen in Kazakhstan, in other parts, you know, of parts of the world that are close to Russia for their own interests? Of course they would. Absolutely. And will they try to twist things? Will they try to play a role? Of course they will. But what is the best possible antidote to that? It is to build a strong, independent workers' movement that is as strong as possible. And the best thing that we can do for that is not to paint a workers' movement in Kazakhstan as part of some imaginary color revolution linked to the CIA or something like that, but is to give actual concrete solidarity and support to build for the building of the workers' movement and the socialist movement in Kazakhstan. So I finish on that, some remarks. Now we're going to take questions. I mean, people can make comments as well, and you know, obviously in meetings, sometimes people say, oh, it's not so much a question, more of a comment, and that's okay. People are allowed to make comments as well. This time now, like, we're going to, in about maybe 30 minutes, we take Ayanor back to answer some questions. So if we can front load more direct questions for this period of time, if the more direct questions we have now and more have more political, you know, more opinions, contributions, etc., more after that, that would be ideal. So let's see how many questions we get, and we will bank a number of questions together and then go to INR. So maybe we get 8 or 9 questions together. We give people maybe 3 minutes and I'll indicate after 2. So I have Dan and then I look at the chat.
Oh, cheers. That was quick. Thanks so much to the speakers, especially the report from Kazakhstan. It was so informative. And, you know, the bravery of the protesters in Kazakhstan is like, it's so inspiring in terms of what's happened. I just had 2 questions. One of them was, what is the latest situation in Kazakhstan? Like, what's happening in terms of resistance? Is there still ongoing resistance? How successful has the government been in crushing the resistance? And what kind of hope is there going forward for the resistance, and, you know, how likely is it to be able to get rid of the regime in Kazakhstan? The second one Paul's kind of already covered, and thanks for that, was about solidarity. I'm from the anti-capitalist resistance and in London in the UK, and we organised a picket outside the Kazakh embassy in London. But what further actions can we do, and what practical support can we give? You know, I'm part of a trade union branch. Can we send money to organizations in Kazakhstan where we can? You know, like, what practical support can we give? You know, and like I said, Paul already mentioned that, but I thought I'd add to that because I think that's more important than anything. But yeah, I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dan. So I might read out a couple of questions that have come in on the chat so they get translated for INR while, and then I go to some more questions. Okay, so Daniel from Lernen im Kampf in Germany says, thank you very much for the great report. Could you tell us more about the role of the different imperialist powers? You said that Western capital dominates the oil and gas production. What is the role of Russian capital? They are the ones who sent the troops. And Jerome from the NPA in France asks, is it possible to have more information about the committee who led this movement? So next, if it's okay, and then I will get a proper speaking list, but for now I just go to the next person with their hand up and then I'll come up with a proper speaking list, if that's okay. It's just Kyle has their hand up and then I'll work it all out. Kyle from DSA Columbus.
Thanks. Thank you. I guess my question is kind of around the idea of, could you describe maybe the politics of, I guess, the workers who are striking, and how connected are they to like socialism and communism these days? I know that's kind of a tricky question these days in the former USSR. So, and then I also know that like other political parties are banned, such as like socialists and communists. So I'm curious, like, what do those forces look like these days, and how is that interplaying, and what is the prospect for that in the future given the current conditions? Thanks.
Thank you, Kyle. Next I'll take Sabira.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Hi, everyone. I just wanted to make the announcement for anyone who is based in London that we, as a few individuals from the Kazakh community in London, would like to go on a protest tomorrow. So this is not represented like by any organization, and we're not from any party. This is more sort of around human rights violations happening now. So if anyone could support our cause, please join us, especially if you want to help us, but also not kind of override the agenda towards anything else. So that would be fantastic. And it is at 1 p.m. tomorrow at Kazakhstan Embassy near Trafalgar Square. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sibiria. Okay, I'll remove your spotlight and then I'll ask some more questions that have come in here. So some questions have come in by direct message. Maybe I won't name who they came in just in case, I don't know. So someone asks, can you talk about the Islamist right in Kazakhstan, real or imagined, and whether the Islamists are attempting to hijack the protests? And then someone else asks, you mentioned the workers took over a city and set up checkpoints. What was the response from other working class people in the area? Did they recognize the workers' checkpoints and support them? Were there any discussions about organizing the city? And then there's a question from Yael. Sorry, I think it's just to expand on one of the previous questions, what role does Chinese capital play in the country? Okay, and then next, and I have some other text questions I come back to, but next I have Paul G from the US and then Jan from the FI. Paul, can you, your question has already been asked. Okay, perfect. That was one of the ones I read out. So Jan, you're next.
You need to unmute, Yannick.
Would I speak in French? Bon, alors.
All right. I have several questions. First of all, thanks a lot to the comrade Aynur. I have several questions. First of all, there was no, the repression in the mining region was not as harsh as elsewhere. Is that linked to the fact that there were more organizations, more capacities to self-organize? You mentioned committees of the ancients, because there were very strong mobilizations in 2011, even though they were defeated eventually. I read in a Russian statement on open democracy that this was linked to the fact that some people were able to prevent provocations. Is that the real explanation? My second question would be on the current regime and the fact that it relied on Vladimir Putin to request an intervention by this military alliance, which is supposed to be a defense alliance, not an alliance of local repression. Yet, this time it played a role of local repression. Comrade Aynur, do you consider that what is happening here is what Ukrainian comrades consider as Russian imperialism? Would you talk of Russian imperialism nowadays? Well, that's it. Oh, one last question, actually. regarding the reality of what are organizations nowadays in Kazakhstan.
Des ONG qui
I read several statements by members of NGOs, which in general defend the human rights. But I didn't have the feeling that there was the beginning of a political project in such organizations. I know that the comrades from the Kazakh socialist movement were victims of repression, and it might not be a good idea to discuss about this movement here because there might be some ears listening. That should not. But do you think that there's any perspective for the workers' movement to structure in a way? Thank you.
Merci, Ian. I remove your spotlight. Okay, I think then I will read the last few questions from the chat, and then we will go to Ayanor to do your best in 8 minutes, Ayanor. I mean, I don't think I've been in a meeting with so many questions for one person. I just don't think it's possible. But you do your best to answer the most interesting questions that you think you can answer. And you will also, we will go back to more discussion then, and you will also be able to come back at the end. So also, yeah. So I will read the last questions. One from Christoph Veltz from Germany. What was the role of the unions and the union leaders in the process? A question from John Meehan, which actually maybe Terry, this maybe is for Terry, not for Ayanor, for her, with the closing of the meeting, which is, can we try to politically broaden the list of signatures on the solidarity statement? The existing list comes across as mainly a Trotskyist rainbow, and that is welcome. And then a question, are there any big German companies involved? How are addresses of solidarity received in Kazakhstan? So do people in Kazakhstan, do they hear about all these motions of solidarity and what do they think? And then Marco Verugio from Controcorrente says, hi, Ayanor, happy to see you again. I would like to ask you about the perspective. I've read an interview where you speak about an open confrontation between various groups of the bourgeoisie, but you say that in any case, the workers will be able to win certain freedoms and get new opportunities. Can you get a bit deeper into that? And then finally, two more, I give them because, and then you choose, Ayanor. Is it true that Nazarbayev tried to seize power after the 5th of January? Is there also an inter-ruling class conflict apart from the popular protests? And Campbell from the Scottish Socialist Party asks, during the Soviet period, Kazakhstan did have a large ethnic Russian population. What is the ethnic composition of the workers taking part in the protests? We go to Ayanor for, I think we had agreed 8 minutes, but I suggest we give 10 minutes. Yeah. 10 minutes, Ayanor, do your best.
Okay. Я постараюсь.
Thank you so much. I'll try to take the questions, as many as I can, but I'll try to be brief. So I wrote down the questions. So there was a question on the situation right now, and is there a possibility for removing Nazarbayev's regime? Well, the strikes and protests of workers were curtailed on the 8th of January by protesters themselves. They decided to do it to prevent bloodshed. differently from December of 2011. The workers were not killed massively, and not so many of them were arrested. And I think that is good news, because now the workers' movement did not suffer a defeat. Yes, there are no more strikes, and they were stopped on the 8th of January, but none of the workers died. In the industrial regions of the country, there were no cases of looting, of murders, because there was the system of self-defense organized. So there was the people's militia there. Therefore, I can say that the workers' movement did not suffer a defeat, and it will continue to put forward demands to their employers and to the government. More than that, the working class got an important experience of struggling. It was the first time when a general strike was organized in the country, in the extracting industry and in the steel industry. So the workers managed to elaborate their political program, even though it was quite brief. And that is good groundwork for further actions. That can be proved as well by the fact that on January 19th, one of the companies in Schnausen, the enterprise that deals with drilling, the workers demanded to nationalize the enterprise. And their demands were supported by other workers who also signed the address to President Tokayev. So it means that the slogans launched by Schnausen workers in 2011, the slogan of nationalization, comes back. And we believe that that is utterly important. We're supported by our organization. We try to spread information about this. More than that, today and yesterday, there were protests by workers from other enterprises in Schnausen. They called to stop repressions in the country. So if the president and the government fail to do that, the workers promised to declare a new strike. That means that the workers' movement hasn't been defeated. Tokayev supported foreign companies. He expressed his support to the Western investors. That testifies to the fact that the government will pursue the former course. They will preserve the model of economy that they've built, and workers would not be ready to take that. That means that the political struggle against the existing regime will continue. So that's my response to the first question. Definitely, prospects for the new social outbreak are looming. There was another question on the role of imperialists in this event. We are against all conspiracy theories. that claim that everything that happened in Kazakhstan was organized by someone from the outside, be it the CIA, the State Department. The fact that Britain or Ukraine or Turkey are also trying to launch some kind of color revolution, it doesn't have anything to do with reality. And that can be proved by the interventions made by the leaders of those very countries. On the 6th of January, the State Secretary Blinken expressed his support for the regime in Kazakhstan. He was followed by the leaders of Russia, Turkey, the European Union, and China. So we can say that there was this bourgeois solidarity expressed towards the existing government in Kazakhstan that could stop the popular uprising. We also claim that there were no notorious 20,000 foreign terrorists that President Tokayev spoke about. They never existed. Tokayev invented it to incite the CSTO to send its troops to the country. So there were no 20,000 terrorists. It was only an excuse. As for the interests of Russia, we believe that Russia only supported one of the sides in the struggle, in this political struggle. The number of Russian troops was insignificant. I think the overall number from the CSTO was about 1,000 troops, and they only were sent there to support the people in power that gained the possibility to send their Kazakhstan army to put down the strikes in other regions. I spoke about this in my interventions and in the articles I wrote, that all opposition parties are banned in Kazakhstan. The Communist Party was closed down in 2015. Our organization is also illegal in the country. We issued a call for democratization. We called upon all social groups to support us in our urge to legalize all parties and trade unions so that workers are able to establish their own organizations and carry out strikes legally. The majority of workers definitely supports socialist ideas and their demand to nationalize production shows that they put forward demands against capitalism, against transnational corporations that exercise this over-exploitation, that loot and rob the country of its resources. So I think that there will be the spring of new left organizations in the country. So there will be new organizations. As for the question on terrorists, I think that only terrorists were the people from the National Security Committee. There were no Islamists, and there are no Islamists in Kazakhstan. They do not have any impact on the political agenda. The role of trade unions. I've already said that there is the official Federation of Trade Unions, and it was excluded from the International Confederation because of trade unions, because they supported the events in Zhanaozen. But that is so-called a fake trade union organization. I'd say that four people, four trade union leaders were jailed because they took part in the independent trade union movement. I'm sorry I didn't take all the questions, but maybe I'll be able to do it in my final remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Einar. That was very interesting, I think, for people. And I think we'll get you 15 minutes at the end, and so we'll have hopefully a chance to get more. So there's a few more questions came in, some that I had missed. So I'll read them now, and Einar, maybe you can take note. One was from Alexandra, who said, what lessons are you drawing from this so far? What do you think it will take for workers' demands to be met in the future? What will success look like? And Susan from Quebec, the organization begins with revolution, but I can't read the rest, I'm afraid, just because it goes off the screen, says, are there active women movements in these struggles? What are their key demands and their role in the current situation? And Christian from the ISO in Germany asks, what is the explanation for the extraordinary workers' movement just in some form of Soviets? Okay. Is there anybody? I suggest we have about 20 minutes for discussion. So the aim is that we would be finished in about 45 minutes time. So the total time of the meeting would be 2 hours. I think that is the most we can reasonably expect of people of a Saturday evening. So would anybody like to come in? Again, there's no problem. You can come in with a question, but also if you'd like to come in with reflections, opinions, a contribution for up to 3 minutes, please ideally raise your hand or put your name in the chat. It's funny, it's like the reverse of the stereotypical meeting where all the supposed questions are actually contributions. Here we only get questions. Anybody? Are there any questions remaining? There we go. Alex Franz Blau from DSA, I think.
Yes, correct. And also, fantastic first pronunciation of my name. It's Franz Blau. I rarely have someone get it on the first time. Hi, I'm from Democratic Socialists of America, specifically the Miami DSA chapter in Miami, Florida, as well as the Florida International University Young Democratic Socialists of America, the youth section. This actually isn't much of a comment, it's more of a question. I guess I was wondering this is something that we were kind of getting to throughout the presentation, but I guess I wanted to maybe ask about it more specifically. How do you sort of make the case to people in this country, specifically to working people in whatever your country is or your local context is, about the importance of a struggle like that of Kazakhstan? Just because, for example, around me in my university, around the people I know, just in my organizing life generally. I mean, if I'm being honest, a lot of them wouldn't, you know, a lot of people wouldn't know to where to place Kazakhstan on a map, or, you know, anything about it, maybe aside from a few stereotypes in that one particular movie. But, you know, I guess, like, I'm wondering, like, how do you then bring someone from that to then not only knowing what Kazakhstan is, but then caring about it and then wanting to show solidarity in some way? And I guess, you know, it's specific to this country, sure, but it's really a more general question about making the case for internationalism. It's a bit easier. I'd imagine a lot of people are familiar with Miami. We have a large Latin American diaspora, so it's easier to make that case with, of course, countries in Latin America where people have a more intimate personal connection. But I guess I'm wondering then, like, how about places where it feels more far off, more distant, and more, separate from them, where you actually have to introduce them to it. So that was my question.
Thank you very much, Alex. And someone who isn't from Kazakhstan may also feel that they want to come in and respond with their opinion to that as well, based on their own experience or whatever. So I'll just quickly read a question from the chat for Ayanor, from Blair Beekman. Or for anyone, again, can someone explain how and why communism was declared illegal in 2015? And then the next speaker is John McAnulty from Socialist Democracy in Ireland. So John, I can't see you, but if you unmute yourself, hopefully you can unmute yourself, actually, yeah?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can. I'll try and find you and then spotlight you. Sorry. Give me 2 seconds.
Well, I'll unspotlight myself. I'm just a dead screen, so it's not really necessary to do that.
John, it's really much easier for the translators if you can put your camera on.
Well, I'll take a few seconds, but not very long, so I'll try it now and see.
I'll unspotlight myself anyway.
Right, okay. I've got the camera on, right?
Okay, it seems like your camera isn't working. Just go
ahead. Do something, don't you? That's me now. Is that all right?
That's perfect, John.
Are we all sitting comfortably? That's okay. I don't want to say too much. What I think is that this is a very large meeting with a lot of people interested about a specific event, which has struck us all as something very important. And then the question we have to ask ourselves is, does this have an ongoing significance? You know, is this an atrocity that dies into the background, or is it something that is going, we're going to give time to, we're going to spend time considering? And I think it obviously is. And I think the main thing is that we have here, first of all, a movement that is largely a workers' movement. And secondly, we have one that's confronting the unity between the oligarchs and Western imperialism in a very direct repression of the workers. And I think I don't have tons of answers or anything like that. I don't know enough. But I think we would need to have a formal organization of some sort that we could all, we'd need to have some political discussion about workers. And we'd also have to have a think about, one of the things that's confused us a lot over the past, say, decade is the question of imperialism. Everybody has fallen out over definitions of imperialism, about how it applies. And this may actually be an opportunity to clarify ideas and unite on a more clear-cut basis. So that's all I really have to say. I don't know enough about Kazakhstan to start pontificating on it, so I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, John. I'll try and spotlight me. And then I have Sebastian Brown from Phoenix DSA, I think.
Hello, everybody. This is actually my first time being in a large international meeting of people like this. I just want to say, first of all, thank you all very much for being here. This is very inspiring. My question has to do with what sorts of tactics and things that we should be on the lookout for from the various oligarchical and corporate institutions, like the media organizations, right? The governments of the world, even schools, universities, college professors. What kinds of things should we be on the lookout for in terms of misinformation and them being able to sort of, like someone said earlier, twist these situations to benefit their interest instead of ours?
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Okay, I have a number of hands up here now. I'll take another hand and then I will... actually, I'll go if Joan, if you are ready to speak, I'll take you next, if that's okay.
I'm Joan McKeown. I'm currently living in New York, a longtime member, lifetime member of various international socialist organizations in Ireland and the US. Alex's question on the lack of knowledge, et cetera, about Kazakhstan. That's an American disease where they know nothing about anywhere except right here and now, unless you've got a large ethnic population near you, as Alex pointed out, in Miami. But I think what is wonderful, and to see some of the young members of the DSA listening to this, what we are hearing from Kazakhstan is what workers can do. Workers don't need to learn how to organize. It's the nature of their job. And we saw it in Portugal. We've seen it in a few places around the world, but not too many in my lifetime. And so it is, you don't need to know the details about Kazakhstan. You need to know the details about oppression and exploitation at the workplace. And people are fighting these day in and day out. If you have a boss who is corrupt or a boss who's pressuring, or your the prices of oil and everything else are rising and your pay is going down, as we are experiencing throughout the world right now, okay? You got to fight back. And workers like what we've been listening to, the oil workers there and all the other brilliant examples that you gave, showed what we talk about as socialist, as workers' power. It's innate to the job. They don't need to be taught very much because they are learning on the job every day, every year of their lives. And right now we see them fighting back. They know how to build barricades. We socialists don't need to teach any of those sorts of things. We do need to go and make the connections that they are seeing all of the imperialist powers, like what happened in Russia at the very start, right? The United States, Britain, are joined, quite frankly, with Russia. They're not sending troops in there, but they are damn saying, hey, workers, calm down, withdraw. We need that oil, right? So it's the imperialist powers throughout the world against that working class. And I think those are the important lessons that we're seeing right now. And let's share that out amongst the people who in the United States and probably elsewhere who say, workers don't want to do anything. Yeah, they do. And they will. And they are. Thank you very much for doing this meeting. It's great.
Thanks a lot, Joan. And thanks for coming. Okay, I have a couple of questions in the chat, which I'll pose. And then I have two more people with their hands up. If anyone else wants to speak, I'd ask you to put your hand up while I'm reading the questions in the chat, okay? Because we're running out of time. And I'm going to close the speaking list and move towards a close. So Lars from Germany asks, to what extent were workers other than those in the oil industry or other extractive industries involved in the insurrectionary movement? What about workers in the service industries? What kind of forums for discussions did the workers develop? Open assemblies? Were there any trade unions from Western Europe that supported the upheaval? And can you provide any contacts? And Ilya from the Russian Socialist Movement asked about the role of Russian imperialism and its allies during the political crisis in Kazakhstan. including the presence of the military contingent, of course. From our side, from the side of the Russian socialist movement, as a Russian socialist organization, we take it as a duty to express our protest against any form of military involvement of Russia. And Yael Sofia, I'm sorry if I mispronounced that, from DSA, to what extent has this current movement and social explosion dealt with anti-communist false consciousness in the country? Okay, now I go to Stuart from Seattle DSA and Reform and Revolution. And if you can put your video on if possible for the translator or interpreters. Stuart? I'm going to go to Kyle from DSA Columbus, Ohio. Oh, Stuart says I'm not letting him. I'm going to request you to turn, to ask to unmute and see if that works, okay? Okay, we skip to Kyle and we see if Stuart gets there. So we go back to Kyle. If you can keep it quick, Kyle, because sure. I wasn't sure if you were a different Kyle from before, but you're definitely the same Kyle. Yeah.
I'm Kyle. Thanks. I just thought I would just give a brief contribution and kind of sum up some of the things that I see and how this relates to, I guess, the rest of the world and its internationalist. You know, like I think with capitalism and imperialism, there's just been these building up pressures. And then of course with the pandemic, that's been like a catalyst for a lot of these pressures, and every country is going to see these pressures kind of break out in the places where they're weakest. Like in the United States, it was, you had like a lot of issues about racism. And then of course the January 6th protest that hit the Capitol building. And in Kazakhstan, we're seeing issues around the workers, which has been a persistent issue for a long time. And I think if we could put this in the context of what we're seeing, it's a string of, you know, workers rising up all across the world in various ways, unique to their specific conditions. But, you know, it's not just like Kazakhstan. You know, I also read, and this is as a casual observer, but, you know, like the Communist Party in Russia is kind of getting new life, and it is now the second largest party in Russia. And I don't know the characteristics of that party. I can't say that's genuine, but it seems to me that in every country, most countries, there is like this shift of to where the workers now have more initiative than that they had before, just a few years prior. And so I think, if anything, that's interesting to socialists and should be interesting to socialist organizers around the world. And of course, I think in the West, it's easy for us to underestimate the importance of Kazakhstan to the sphere of influence to the rest of the former USSR. And so if you're not familiar, I would recommend, you know, try to read up on it and learn about it, because it is quite significant. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Kyle. For what it's worth, Stuart can't get his thing working, but he messaged saying that he was going to talk about independent media. This is in response to Alex. Independent media, building small solidarity actions with YDSA, which I think is Youth DSA, and the importance of having meetings on international topics. So that's some ideas that maybe you can try. One more question has come in via chat. In terms of organizing workers, is there no coalition in case there is no change at all? And what is the plan for the world to stay updated about the well-being of those arrested? And Stefan has put in about a message there about how people can stay updated and so on. So with that, we have half an hour left, which is pretty good. We've done good on times here. So I think we can go back to iron ore for 20 minutes, which is better than we had originally provided for. So hopefully that gives iron ore a lot of time to respond to the questions. And then back to Terry to sum us up and close us out for 10 minutes at the end. So this is the last time you hear from me. So just thanks a lot, everybody, for your contributions. Thanks a lot to all the supporting organizations. And above all, thanks to the interpreters for your work, and of course to Ainur. So over to you, Ainur.
Спасибо, товарищи, за
многочисленные... Dear comrades, thank you so much for your questions. There was a question on practical support to protesters and repressed workers. I'd say that we have experience in this area. Paul Murphy took part in the solidarity campaign with oil workers in Janelzin after the shooting against the workers. There were initiatives by different left groups. There was the wide international campaign to support the arrested oil workers. That campaign played a great role because a lot of people were released from prison and their sentences were shortened. So I think we should repeat this campaign. Maybe Paul Murphy would also head it, and the campaign that has been launched could also follow up, so that that could be a campaign to free those workers who are in prison, to release those activists that would be on trial quite soon. It would also be important to disclose the number of people who were really killed in the clamping downs, and also the list of those people who were tortured. As for the role of women in the protest, of course, women played a great role. They took part in the protests, and they were very active. There was also a movement by women with many children in Nur-Sultan, the capital of the country, and in Almaty. There were many women who went to support the strikers in Janelzin. So the role of women is extremely important, and they are very active. There was a question on the social explosion and whether there were anti-communist elements, or if they could be made anti-communist. Different from the situation in Ukraine, there were no anti-communist slogans, because Nazarbayev's regime decommunized everything already. They renamed the streets, the squares. They put down all the statues and monuments to Bolsheviks and communists, as well as Soviet power. The population and the popular masses who took part in the protests, that they did not have any anti-communist slogans at all. As for the social political demands that were put forward in different cities and towns, I could say that it was the agenda of the left. It is close to socialist and communist ideas. And it shows that the workers' movement, without any political parties or trade unions, managed to put forward maybe somewhat brief, but very important demands. They managed to form their own committees and to head the struggle. There were also questions on the national makeup of the working class. As for the oil workers in the Western Kazakhstan, workers are Kazakh. If we take the central region, the steel workers and miners, a lot of them are Russian, of the Russian origin, you know, and there are also other ethnicities. So we could say that the strikes were international in this regard. The strikes also spread to the northern regions of the country, and that's where most of the Russian population lives. So we could say that the workers' population is quite united. There was also a question on the trade unions from the West supported the movement. I would say that the international trade union movement has not anyhow responded. There were separate letters by trade unions. There was the PAMA picket organized in Athens, in Greece. I saw signatures of different trade union members as regards the petition that you launched. But I think that's pretty much it for the Western trade unions. There were, of course, letters of solidarity from Russian trade unions, the independent trade unions who made an internationalist statement. A question on the Chinese capital. Definitely it is present, and it is very active as regards extraction of natural resources, oil production, and they are part of the anti-trade union policies. As for the trade unions, I've already said that there is a law on trade unions that was introduced in 2014. It violates all the ILO rulings. So all independent trade unions have been closed down. But the workers themselves create their own independent trade unions. They try to legalize them. And that was one of the demands put forward during the recent strikes. Now, a question on spontaneous councils or committees. Of course, they are not the councils of the worker deputies. Of course, the level of self-organization is not that high. What I would call them is coordination committees that helped workers to organize road blockages. Blocking the roads, it was something that happened everywhere in the industrial areas. The workers closed off roads to fend off police and army. It was organized in the city of Krontau, where workers organized their own checkpoints to prevent the military from coming into the town. That was the practice that many strikers shared in the western regions of Kazakhstan. As for the struggle against disinformation, you know, these conferences or maybe sharing information on the social media, that is what is very important for letting the left across the globe know more. The solidarity campaign with the people who suffered from repressions, I think that should give an impetus to make people want to learn more. As for other organizations, such as human rights organizations, we'll try to collect as much data as we can on the number of people who were killed, who were wounded, and tortured so that we could really defend their rights on the international level.
Что же касается...
Yet another question on the split in the international communist movement. Yes, in the post-Soviet area, we can see now that a number of the communist parties, including the Communist Party of Russia, they supported the invasion or the introduction of the Russian troops in Kazakhstan. That was the position that was taken by other communist parties as well. So they went back on the class approach because they supported their own bourgeoisie and expressed their condemnation to the workers' movement in Kazakhstan. So yes, there is the split or rift in the left. The communist organizations, some of them supported the workers' movement and some of them were against. And I think it is a watershed moment that shows us who's who. We shouldn't, under no excuse, allow the international interventions to happen in order to put down the workers' movement. In Kazakhstan, we can see that there is an urgent need to bring together the organizations of the left to defend the strikers against any kind of chauvinism or against those groups of the left that happen to be on the other side of the barricades and who support the bourgeois government and imperialist interventions. As for the role of Nazarbayev after the 6th of January, it's hard to say, but we can say that there was a rift in the ruling class and it's going to grow stronger. Very unlikely is that Nazarbayev will try to take power now. But there are people who were associated with him. There are oligarchs who will try to strengthen this idea of terrorist dictatorship, and they will try to take back their privileges. Yet the ruling class has been split, and I think this is one of the main features of the revolutionary situation.
Что же мне еще хочется сказать?
So what else should I say? Dear comrades, I think that the fact that you managed to organize this massive campaign from the point of view of building up our international movement to support the workers from Kazakhstan, I think you said, some of you said very right that it's... of course, not so many people in the United States know about Kazakhstan, but the fact that the workers rose up to face multinational corporations and imperialism from different countries, I think that is worth speaking about, and this struggle should get support. We believe that the workers' movement should form its own class trade unions and its own political party. That is what we're going to try to work towards. We support workers' activists in building this organizations and infrastructure so that they could form a mass workers' party that would have a socialist program of action. The fact that the workers demanded to nationalize the whole of the extracting industry under the control of the workers' collectives, I think this is the initiative we must support. Of course, this demand is not self-sufficient. It could be more or less a transition program. It's a precondition for the growth and of the political consciousness of the working class. And of course, there is an important idea of moving towards this socialist development of the country, and that cannot be implemented without the working class taking power.
Поэтому огромное спасибо за то, что вы.
Thank you so much for taking part in the solidarity campaign. Thank you for collecting all the signatures. Thank you for organizing this conference. I think it is very important to maybe learn a little bit about the situation in Kazakhstan now.
Thank you.
Спасибо.
Thank you so much, Jaina. I think I speak for the whole meeting to say that was incredibly fascinating and informative. And thank you to everybody who's attended tonight. I think it's been a very rich discussion. As Stefan put in the chat, if you didn't sign up for this meeting through the form and you want to stay in touch with the Future Defence Campaign, I think Paul inspired us all by talking about the example of the CP of the USA and the Sacco and Vanzetti campaign. It's a big task to set ourselves, but I think it's right. And I think John Meehan is right to say that although we were able to bring together quite a lot of signatures already on the petition, the political reach is not as broad as it needs to be to exert real political pressure. So we need to redouble our efforts to pressure other people to sign up, but most importantly, I'm sure that we'll be in touch with Aina over the days ahead to really look at how we can put flesh on the bones of a defence committee. I think it's an answer to the question that Alex raised. In my experience, the thing about international solidarity, and Paul illustrated it when he spoke about his personal experience of being in those meetings in Kazakhstan 10 years ago, is that you build personal links. You develop a situation where people know about the day-to-day lives of the workers they're acting in solidarity with. So we can develop a situation where we find out more about some of the people who've been imprisoned. As Aina said, I heard on the radio in Britain today about people being tortured, people in hospital being afraid that they could be picked up for having been on the demonstrations and so on. So this is a campaign that we do need to wage, and I'm sure that all the organisations who sponsored the meeting are committed to working together to find the best ways of doing that. And last but not least, a huge, huge appreciation to our translators, without whom we wouldn't have been able to function. So thank you, comrades, and good night. or good afternoon for comrades in the United States. Thank you very much.